Hello and welcome to the European Hoops Podcast. We are a Sports Ethos presentation. We bring you all the coverage you need of the EuroLeague. We recap and preview all the action and cover all the news surrounding the competition. Join us on this ride and learn more about some of the best basketball played in the world. Make sure you don't miss any episodes by subscribing to the podcast and follow us on Twitter at Ethos EuroLeague. How are you doing, Diogo? Are you ready to break down all the action of the first two games of each playoff series and preview what's about to happen moving forward?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm totally ready for it. The first two games were pretty interesting on every matchup, so I can't wait to talk about this. Let's go.
On this episode, we will bring you up to date with each of the four ongoing playoff series and preview what to expect the rest of the way. A week from today, on Monday, we will bring you a new episode recapping game 3 and 4 in the series that the game 4 happens, of the matchups and previewing whichever games 5 might be happening on this edition of the EuroLeague playoffs. We start in Monaco, where the home team faces Maccabi in the series that heads into Tel Aviv tied at 1 after Maccabi stealing game 1. On the first game of the series, Maccabi won with a score of 79-67. Wade Baldwin IV was the MVP of the game. Baldwin performed at a high level, scoring 20 points, grabbing 6 rebounds, having 6 assists and 1 steal. Josh Nebo also had a great performance for Maccabi with 12 points, 8 rebounds and 2 assists. On the other hand, Alpha Diallo was the top performer for Monaco, scoring 50 points, grabbing 6 rebounds, having 5 assists. Monaco lacked shooting on this game and they ended the game with only 4 out of 26 shots from the 3-point line after shooting 0 from 10 in the first half. Maccabi came into the game well prepared and their defense was outstanding. They exploited Monaco's lack of shooting and controlled the game from the start to finish. Maccabi fans also played a role in this game and they might have managed to steal home court advantage for Monaco already on this game 1 of the series. The first quarter was a hard-fought battle with Mike James attacking Maccabi's bigs and keeping Monaco in the game. However, Maccabi managed to take the lead in the end with a score heading onto the second quarter 18-16. In the second quarter, the game was still a low-scoring one with Maccabi managing to maintain their lead. Monaco struggled from the three-point line, missing all of their 10 attempts, while Maccabi made 3 out of 8. At halftime, Maccabi led the game 36-33. In the third quarter, Maccabi came out strong, causing some mistakes and getting some easy baskets. They went on an 11-3 run and they took an 11-point lead, making the score 47-36. Maccabi outscored Monaco 24-17 in the third quarter and in the end won the game with a score of 79-67. Monaco struggled in the most crucial moment of the game and their lack of shooting was exploited by Maccabi during the whole matchup. John DiBartolomeo was one of the keys for Maccabi in this first game of the series. His hustle and defense had a considerable impact on this win for Maccabi. The game had everything we expected, including a lot of intensity, balance, physicality, and tough shots made by both team superstars like Mike James, Lorenzo Brown, and Wade Baldwin. This game was just the first of the series, and Maccabi had an already sold-out arena for their game 3, and it sold out in just 4 minutes. It was announced during this first game of the series, and the atmosphere in Tel Aviv will be absolutely incredible. Monaco will have a very hard time to recover home court advantage there. On the second game of the series, Maccabi had the lead heading into this game. They were ahead 1-0, but Monaco came out with a different level of intensity and urgency, taking the win 86-74, with the series now being tied 1-1. Jordan Lloyd was the MVP of the game, putting up an impressive 33 points, 2 rebounds and 2 assists, along with 2 steals. He was supported by Yakuba Otara with 12 points, while Lorenzo Brown was the best for the visitors with 16 points, 5 rebounds and 6 assists. The 33 points by Jordan Lloyd, the leader of Monaco on this bounce back win, was a career high for him. Monaco started the game with Otara, who made his presence felt on both sides of the court, scoring the first 6 points of the game with 2 three-point shots, but mostly his defensive intensity disrupting Maccabi's offense was one of the keys for Monaco to start this game well. After struggling from deep in the first game of the series, Monaco started this game with 3 three-pointers made and 11 a run. Nibu was a strong on offensive glass early on for Maccabi. He was able to buy Maccabi some extra possessions, and after a timeout to stop the bleeding and to stop Monaco's 11 a run, Maccabi went on an 8-0 run of their own. They got the game down to 3 points with Wade Baldwin the fourth leading the charge. Despite the good start by Monaco, Maccabi was right there with them, and in the end of the first quarter, Monaco was up 22-18. In the second quarter, Sorkin energy off the bench was being felt, as he usually does and he usually provides to this Maccabi team. He was a disruptor on both sides of the court. Maccabi started the second quarter 8-2 and was able to take the lead 24-26. But Monaco aggressive defense paid off, causing 6 turnovers in only 12 minutes of the game. Both teams played with high intensity, leaving everything on the floor. Mike James was very shy in this first half, and the team needs big contributions for him if they will be dreaming of stealing any of the games in Tel Aviv. Maccabi managed to win the second quarter 23-20. The score was 42-41 in favor of Monaco at halftime. Monaco started the third quarter 15-3 to open up their largest lead of the night at 13 points. The scoreboard was 57-44 at that moment. Altara's energy continued to be a big part of Monaco's success until this point, and especially in the beginning of the second half. Monaco was able to maintain their lead and take the win 86-74 with significant contributions of and Otar. These two games were played at high intensity, with Maccabi translating their best momentum that they had late in the season into this game one, while Monaco kept their struggles from late in the regular season. Monaco was able to punch back on game two. I am sticking to my prediction of Maccabi in four. What about you, Duke? What caught your eye on these two games, and how do you see this series evolving?
Yeah, so first of all, the first thing that caught my eye was that both teams started this series the same way that they finished the regular season. Like you just mentioned, Maccabi had an amazing finish to the regular season, and they went into game one and they kept it. So that game was pure dominance by Maccabi. They won every single quarter in that game. And Monaco just didn't show enough sense of urgency for a home playoff game, and they struggled massively offensively, especially in the three-point shooting aspect. And Jordan Lloyd in game one played one of the worst games I've ever seen him play. But then game two, like you said, a career high for him. He answered right back. Coach Obradovic from Monaco, he made adjustments starting Ouattara. And they started the game so much more aggressive, especially due to his adjustment, putting Ouattara in the starting five, because he set the tone for them defensively, and that's what allowed them to go on that 11-0 run to start the game. Even though Maccabi answered with a good second quarter, it didn't matter, because out of the halftime, Monaco came out strong and they just dominated the third quarter. So Lloyd was too much for them to handle, and we have a series. Like, great job by Maccabi getting one on the road. I do agree with you that it's going to be tough for Monaco to go in there and steal a game to get home court advantage again. But I'm going to stick to my prediction of Monaco in five. I think this game right here, game two, gives them confidence and maybe the blueprint to know how to beat Maccabi. And I think they have the personnel with Mike James, Jordan Loy, Elie Okobo. I think they have the personnel to go steal one game on the road. So I'm going to stick to Monaco in five.
What do you think will be the keys for Monaco to be able to go to Tel Aviv and steal one of the games? For me, essentially, we will need to see more Mike James and a better Mike James being able to attack the basket and put a lot of pressure on the Maccabi's bigs. We expect both teams to play with very high intensity. The games will be very hard fought from both sides. So certainly neither of the teams can not stand up to the moment and not play with that intensity. But what do you think?
Yeah, in my opinion, I just think they gotta be aggressive. Like, the way they started game two, they were very aggressive defending and then running on the break in quick transitions. So I think they need to stick to that. And then secondly, you mentioned Mike James. I think Mike James will show up regardless, even if it's not a 20-point game. I think he's going to show up regardless, even if it's just making plays for others or for himself. I just think that between Jordan Lloyd and Elie Okobo, I think at least one of them has to give them a big game. Like, obviously, I'm not saying that it has to be a 30-point game like Jordan Lloyd or a career high for either of them, but they got to show up because they can't be too dependent on Mike James, because we say this sometimes that Mike James holds the ball a lot. So if he's their only option, if he's the only one that gets it going, it's going to be hard for them because they're going to be playing isolations. They're going to be playing throughout the shot clock, like the whole 24 almost. So I think one of these guys needs to show up and give Mike the help that they need. So in order for them to keep running and to keep playing as a team, because I feel like Mike will trust one of them if they start the game strong, meaning that I think he will share the ball and they will be able to run and stay aggressive. I think that's the key for them to steal a game there.
I think that I have been wondering that can give Monaco chances also if they would be willing to go into some of three guard lineups. I think they might be able to get away with it against Maccabi. I know that Bonzi Colson will try to post up, but I think that they can maybe get away with it, and that can be an option for them to punch back and show something different to Maccabi. But let's see where Obradovic is willing to go. This is one of the two series that we know will give us two more games this week. We will for sure have a game for. These are two games that will be must tune in for on Tuesday and Thursday. Let's move on to Madrid, where we saw the lower seed Partizan stole two games and looked like a legit title contender until a brawl broke out on the court and end the game too earlier. This might have impact on the series, but let's break down each of these games. On the first game of the series, we saw a hard-fought game with Partizan managing to secure an important road win, beating Real Madrid 87-89. The MVP was Partizan's Kevin Panther. He had an outstanding performance with 26 points, 3 rebounds, 6 assists. Matias Lessort had also a great game with 11 points, 3 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal and 1 block. While for Real Madrid, Gabriel Deck was the standout performer with 24 points, 8 rebounds, 1 assist and 1 steal. The opening quarter of the game was an intense back and forth battle with neither team able to gain a significant advantage as they traded baskets for most of the quarter, finishing with a tie score of 22. Tight competition continued into the second quarter with Real Madrid rebounding, proving crucial for them to stay in this game as they grabbed 8 offensive rebounds, leading to 11 second chance points. On the other side, Partizan capitalized on Real's turnovers, converting them into 7 points, allowing them to head into halftime ahead 44-48. Real started the second half strongly and won the third quarter 20-15, taking 1-point lead into the final quarter of the game. However, Partizan fought back and Kevin Panther clutched 3-point shots, gave them the win. Ultimately, it was Partizan's ability to keep their composure and fight until the end that allowed them to secure this crucial road win and give them the advantage of the series and still home court advantage from Real Madrid on this game one. On the second game of the series, Partizan dominated Real Madrid with a 95-80 victory in the game two. The game was suspended with 1 minute and 40 left due to an on-court fight where we saw some horrific scenes that don't have anything to do with basketball. Partizan leads the series 2-0 heading into their home court. Walter Tavares from Real Madrid was ruled out of this game after getting a knee injury on the first game of the series. Vincent Poirier from Real was initially expected to miss the game since he had recently had an appendectomy. He was able to play and to give some minutes to Real. Lessort from Partizan was the MVP, while Nunley from Partizan and Musa from Real Madrid also had good performance on this game. Partizan started the game really strongly. They ended the first quarter with a 10-point lead, scoring 31 points and allowing 21. Real Madrid struggled to contain Partizan transition game. Partizan won the second quarter 20-16, leading at halftime 51-37. Real Madrid started the second half with a 11-2 run, powered by a zone defense and some full court press that gave Partizan issues for the first 5 minutes of the second half, but Partizan was able to stabilize the game in the second part of the third quarter, with Real Madrid winning the quarter by only 1 point, 25-24, and reducing Partizan lead by only 1 point heading into the fourth. Partizan kept their dominant performance in the fourth quarter, with the game being suspended with just under 2 minutes to play due to this on-court fight. Partizan won the game 95-80 and leads the series 2-0 heading into Belgrade. The results of this brawl was a 5-game suspension for Yabusele, a 2-game suspension for Kevin Panther, 1-game suspension for Lasort, and 1-game suspension for Gabriel Deck. The worst news were the Exum injury that likely would keep him away from the rest of the season. We have seen now some more optimistic reports after he undergoing some further testing, and there is some hope that he might be able to return. We don't know when yet. Partizan is on a great situation to win this series and to move on to the Final Four, but they will potentially be lacking their 3 best players on Exum, Panther and Lasort. While I think that they can be able to match with Real Madrid on their home court, they might be able to guarantee 1 win with 3 games left. I would favor them the rest of the way. I see the offensive load that Madar and Avramovic will have to carry. It will be huge. I think that Real Madrid might need to be considered favorite heading into this game 3. This brawl might end up favoring Real Madrid. The brawl started with unsportsmanlike fall on Lul over Panther, with Panther reacting to it, and after other players getting involved, namely Yabusele Deck, that had actions that went beside the acceptable, especially Yabusele body slamming Exum onto the floor, but also Moose and Lasort that were more heavily involved in the situation, especially Lasort sending Musa to the floor by his neck. While it looked a somewhat exaggerated situation by Musa, it certainly isn't an action that you want to see on a basketball court. Doesn't have anything to do with basketball, and nothing of it did. In the end, it was surprisingly how lightly Yabusele's suspension was, and that Lul wasn't even fine by his role on this whole situation. The outcome of the whole thing ends up being the Partizan that was in a dominant situation in this series and was playing the best basketball of the series. They now have a harder path to make it to the Final Four. While I think they still need to be considered favorites, I can see this series eventually extending even until a game 5. Let's see what impact that this whole situation might have. What do you think, Diogo? What do you think that what have you seen on this series, and what impact do you think that these suspensions and the potential Exum injury might have on the outcome of this series between Real Madrid and Partizan?
I think that even more so than just this series, I didn't like the punishments that was given, because I feel like it can hurt the Final Four, especially for Partizan, because if they win this game right here, then they won't have Panther to play in the semifinal. Hopefully, they look at what Shane Larkin said. I agree with him 100% that if Partizan wins this game and goes on to the Final Four, I think they should allow every player to play in the Final Four and do the suspension the next regular season, because I don't think any Partizan player should be denied the opportunity to play in the Final Four. And especially when, honestly, this is my opinion, I just don't think that any action from any Partizan player was bad enough that they shouldn't be able to play in the Final Four. So we'll see how that goes, but hopefully they can have everybody available in case they make it, of course. But now getting to the series, man, first of all, I just want to say that I'm an idiot for going against Obradovic and picking Real Madrid, because the coaching gap in this series, it's so wide, man. Obradovic has been doing a great job with Partizan. To me, it has been the best story in EuroLeague this year, the way they've been playing and what they've been able to do these first two games. This is just an amazing job by them overall. Going to Madrid, stealing both games, they just proved to everybody that they belong in the Final Four. I think Kevin Panther has been the best player in the series so far, and him and Dante Exum have held their own more than enough against Real Madrid's wings. And speaking of Real Madrid wings, I expected so much better from Musa and Mario, especially Musa. I think they need to be way more aggressive and take control of the games. But this is all shout out to Partizan, man. It's the true definition of a team, and it's not just names put together. If you had looked to their roster and their whole team in the preseason or the beginning of the season, I didn't have them making the playoffs. I think they would be up there, like top 10, maybe fighting for the eighth spot. But I think they're proving everybody wrong. And I think they're proving that they belong in here with the big dogs. And I really hope, even though I picked Real Madrid after watching both games, I really hope Partizan can get into the ring and get to the Final Four.
Yeah, this is an unfortunate situation. And EuroLeague had already announced that there won't be changes in this punishment. So it means that if Partizan does win Game 3, they are even more heavily penalized because Panther won't be available for a potential semifinal game. So that won't be changed. And it's really unfortunate. And I do agree with you. Of course, we don't want to see, for example, that happening on Yabusele's case. At least my personal opinion is that his punishment should be heavier because that's an act of violence that is unjustifiable. And when he ends up injuring another player, and even if he didn't, Exum wasn't injured after that situation, he should be more heavily punished within the parameters of the EuroLeague. And there is the possibility of punishment up to 3 seasons. I wouldn't want to see what that will require. And about the game 3 in Belgrade, I just think that Partizan is in such a big talent disadvantage for this game, because we have for Real Madrid Goss, Musa, Ezonia, Corneli, Poirier, Rodriguez, Lul, Rudy Fernandez, Hanga, Randolph, Kosar, all available. Eventually Tavares will also be available, and the indications are good that he will be available at least for a game 4. But since this is a must-win game, I won't be surprised if he is at least ready to play and on the bench ready to play. On the other side, Partizan has Madar, Avramovic, Nunali, Ledej, Smiljagić, Papa Petrov, Andzukic, and it drops considerably from there. It's just and mostly about the shot creation. I think that will be the biggest Partizan issue here. I think that they might be able to match Real Madrid on the front court, but demanding almost 40 minutes from Madar and Avramovic, it's like... it's above their pay grade, and I'm sure that they will do a great job at it. It's just hard to see how Real Madrid wouldn't be considered favorites on this situation. Now, a situation that for me is worth to monitor, it will be Exum, to see if he will be able to play at least one of these games and if he will be able to play again this season. But for this game 3, I think I need to favor Real Madrid, and I think this is still a long series and the games be extremely intense, and let's see what happens there. I don't know if you have something to add about what to expect on Partizan home court for this potential one or two games of this series.
Yeah, I'm just curious to see what type of playstyle they will adopt, per se, for these two games, because, and especially if they don't have Exum as well, I'm very curious to see how they will approach the game with the options they have. But I think they're going to be able to get one at home, and obviously that's enough to make to the Final Four. I think even if it's like an ugly game based on defense or something like that, I think they will be able to get one. They have the coach to get you one, so I think they're going to be able to do that. But I'm very curious to see how they approach it, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And these are the games where Musa and Mario Ezonius should step up. Let's move on to another series of this playoffs. In Barcelona, the home team started the series in the best possible way, leading 2-0 against Žalgiris. Barcelona took game 1 with a dominant victory, 91-69, over Žalgiris. The MVP of the game was Shanley, who put on a good performance with 17 points, 5 rebounds, 1 assist and 1 steal. Joining him on the top of the leaderboard was Nikola Mirotic with 15 points, 4 rebounds, 1 assist and 1 steal. On the other side, Akile Polonara was the top performer for Žalgiris with 8 points, 3 rebounds, 1 assist and 2 steals. From the get-go, Barcelona put on a dominant display, holding Žalgiris to just 2 out of 13 shots from deep, controlling most of the game. In the first half, Žalgiris struggled on finding their footing, with Barcelona dominating on both ends of the court. Mirotic was the star of the show, scoring 7 out of the first 9 points for Barcelona. With clever tactical tweaks, Barcelona was able to take away Žalgiris' 3-point game on defense, and on offense, they were ready for Žalgiris switching defense for this game 1. Barcelona kept forcing the switch of Žalgiris' bigs into one of their guards, attacked it to big help while clearing the corner, flaring of the guard into that side of the court and giving him a driving line. This would allow an action at the basket or create an open shot after the ball moving. Although Žalgiris was able to find some momentum late in the first quarter and early in the second with their bench unit, Barcelona was able to step up and keep them at bay. Žalgiris struggled with shot selection and physicality, which allowed Barcelona to dominate the boards with 37 rebounds. At halftime, Barcelona was leading comfortably with a score of 48-31. They closed the second quarter with three consecutive three-pointers, which gave them this significant lead. In the second half, Žalgiris tried to mount a comeback with a 4-0 run to start the third quarter, but Barcelona answered right away with back-to-back three-pointers, while Žalgiris was able to put up a fight in the third quarter with a score of 18-22. Barcelona took off in the fourth quarter with a 10-2 run. Despite only scoring 4 points, Satoranski was able to dominate his game and show off what he's able to do. In only 21 minutes, he was on the floor. He had 7 rebounds and 4 assists, but mostly he dictated the pace of the game and controlled it. All in all, it was a dominant display by Barcelona. In the game 2, with a 1-game deficit, it was time for Žalgiris to try to steal a game on the road. But in this hard-fought game, Barcelona secured a 89-81 victory over Žalgiris to take the 2-0 lead in this playoff series. Despite Žalgiris' impressive effort, the game ended with a thrilling 9-3 run by Barcelona to close this win. Jan Veselý was named the MVP of the game with a dominant performance of 26 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists and 1 block. Nikola Mirotic was also a standout performer for Barcelona, scoring 22 points, grabbing 4 rebounds and stealing the ball twice. For Žalgiris, Brazdeikis stood out with 20 points, 1 rebound and 2 assists. Žalgiris went with a small ball lineup, Schmitz playing at the center position. The more mobile lineup allowed Žalgiris to be more aggressive, move at a better tempo and attack the basket. After the issues on the game 1, we saw Žalgiris deciding not to switch on defense. They were fighting to go over the screens. Barcelona, on the other hand, was switching and Žalgiris looked for mismatches inside, moving the ball well and finally open shots while attacking the paint with drives, winning the first quarter 20-21. In the second quarter, neither team was able to play good defense. Žalgiris was able to beat Barcelona defense and continue to score in the paint. Barcelona found success by playing through their bigs, especially Veselý and Mirotic, that were mismatch nightmares for this Žalgiris small ball lineup and across the whole game. Barcelona won the second quarter 25-23, heading into halftime with a 45-44 lead. With 3:26 remaining to play, Barcelona had only a 2-point lead, but they were able to remain calm and composed against a combative Žalgiris. In the end, with a 9-3 run, they shown the ability to close the game and head to Kaunas with a 2-0 lead. I stand by my pick of Barcelona in 4 games, with Žalgiris showing the ability of competing and certainly being able to give a fight and to put up a fight on this game 3, and I expect them to be able to steal this game 3. They showed the ability to score on the paint and to mostly be physical and to present different facets against Barcelona's superior talent and superior roster. And I expect this game 3 to be a battle and Žalgiris to steal 1 game in this series at home. What about you, Diogo?
I'm going to stick with Barcelona in 3. I'll get into it on why I think that a bit later. But first off, in game 1, Barcelona, I think they were trying to send a message that of how much of a better team they are, and they just dominated their whole game. Barcelona hit more threes in game 1 than Žalgiris attempted. So they're just not going to beat Barcelona like that, and Mirotic is by far the best player on the court at all times. So game 1, it wasn't really much of a story there. Barcelona just dominated from the beginning to the end. But then game 2, Žalgiris tried to make some adjustments, going small, to try to be better offensively. And it worked because they put up a fight, absolutely. But again, the shooting aspect, I think it really plays a big role in this series. And I don't think that Žalgiris doesn't have the ability to make threes, because I think they do. But they just don't shoot enough. Like, they shot 50%, but they shot 16 threes in game 2. So that's not enough, and you're not going to beat Barcelona like that, especially in Palau Blaugrana. So with them going small, Mirotić and Vezeli, they had their way. Like, Vezeli had a great game. Mirotić was great, as he usually is. And Barcelona was able to take control of the game after it being super close around the halftime. But then they took over, and they basically took over the series as well, because even though Zalgiris is a great home team, and again, you think they're going to win game three, I think they're going to make it super competitive. Absolutely. I think it's going to come down to the final minutes, final seconds, however you want to say it. But I think Barcelona, in the end, with Saransky and Mirotić on the court in the end of a clutch game, I think they're going to be able to get it done and finish this in three. So I'm going to stick with my prediction of Barcelona in three.
So we have breaking news while we are recording this podcast. According to Matteo Andreani, Exum should be a go for game three. He should be... The injury doesn't seem to be as serious as expected, or as the first assessments by the Partizan doctors were, and we should have Exum ready to play for game three. I think this does balance somewhat the scales for Partizan, and I think this might be enough for them to really have enough shot creation and enough creators to win one of their games at home. And I expect Partizan to be able to close this game at home and make these stops. A four-game series, as weird as it sounds, probably a four-game series will be better for Partizan than the third three-game series. I'm certain that they won't try to lose game three. I'm certain of that. But as weird as that sounds, the four-game series would be a better outcome for them because of having Panther available for the semifinals. This is big, isn't it, Jo?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, it adds more shot creation, some rim pressure, which I think they really need to attack Real Madrid's wings. And especially if Tavares still doesn't play, I think he will, but if he doesn't, Exum gives them the ability to drive to the basket and get to the paint. And I think that's very, very important for them. And even if Tavares plays, they still have to attack him to create fouls, to kick it out. So it's big for Partizan, absolutely.
Absolutely, and another reason to be tuned in for this game. Let's finalize this podcast with probably the more expected of the series, where the first Olympiacos is playing the 8th seed Fenerbahce on a clash between two title contenders. In game one, Olympiacos shown some of the power we saw during the regular season, ending the game with a final score of 79-68 in their favor. Fenerbahce got off to a solid start, shooting 3 of 5 from 3 in the first quarter, being ahead 21-19 in the end of this quarter. But Olympiacos' defensive intensity in the second quarter allowed them to go into halftime ahead 37-35. Olympiacos caught fire in the second half, with Zenkov and Cannon leading the charge. In the third quarter, they were simply unstoppable, scoring a combined 24 points, with Cannon shooting a blistering 5 from 6 from behind the arc. This burst of energy gave them a 12-point lead going into the final quarter, where they were able to protect and secure the win. Both teams played with intensity and had a strong defensive performances. Fenerbahce shown they can give Olympiacos issues, but they need to do it consistently during the 40 minutes of the game, since Olympiacos is able to go on demolishing runs and build considerable advantages that are hard to come back from. Zenkov led the way for Olympiacos with 19 points, 6 rebounds and 3 assists, while Cannon added 18 points, shooting impressive 6 of 7 from 3. On the other side, Goodrich had a solid performance with 12 points, 5 rebounds and 6 assists for Fenerbahce. Leading 1-0 heading into the game 2, it was time for Fenerbahce to punch back and to steal home court advantage, getting a win in Greece. Fenerbahce was able to steal this win from Olympiacos with a strong comeback, winning the game 82-78. The top performances for the game were Nigel Hayes-Davis and Jonathan Motley, who both scored 15 points and added 6 and 2 rebounds respectively. Hayes also contributed with 5 assists and 1 steal. On the other side, Sashev Zenkov led Olympiacos with 18 points, 7 rebounds, 1 assist and 2 steals, and including a 3-point shot from the logo, but it wasn't enough for Olympiacos on this game. It was clear that both teams were ready to fight hard. The playoff series was 1-0 in favor of Olympiacos, so Fenerbahce needed this win to tie up the series and to be able to try to close the series on their home court. Olympiacos came out strong in the first quarter, not missing a beat after game one. They went on a 10-0 run after Fenerbahce scored the first point of the game. Cannon continued on fire early on this game, and after shooting 6 of 7 from 3 on game one, he started the game two being 2 of 2 from behind the arc. Olympiacos dominated the first quarter, winning 24-10. However, Fenerbahce was not ready to give up. Carson Edwards provided Fenerbahce with good minutes and a spark off the bench, scoring 8 points during the first 4 minutes of the second quarter. Fenerbahce defense disrupted Olympiacos' offense, forcing them to make mistakes, and they were able to capitalize on those mistakes. Fenerbahce won the second quarter 24-13, but they still trailed to Olympiacos 37-34 heading into halftime. Carson Edwards was so important for this Fenerbahce comeback that he started the second half. Olympiacos was able to increase their lead with a 19-17 third quarter, heading into the fourth with a 5-point advantage, but Fenerbahce was able to come back into the game. They targeted mismatches and they dominated the offensive glass. The fourth quarter was a back-and-forth battle, with both teams exchanging leads. Slokas tried to be the closer that Olympiacos needs, but Fenerbahce, with half the numbers of turnovers, 7 against 14, and 3 times more offensive rebounds, 15 against 5, just had too many chances available to keep grinding the mismatches and came out of this game with the win. Olympiacos closed this game with Slokas, Walcott, Makinski, Vzenkov, and Fall, against a lineup of Dorsey, Guduric, Pierre, Nigel Hayes-Davis, and Motley. It will be intriguing to see what solutions Olympiacos can present to steal a game in Istanbul. They did miss having Papadnikolaou's size on the floor late in the game. You had picked Fenerbahce in 4, with them stealing one of the games, and I had Olympiacos in 5, expecting a long and hard-fought series. I stand by it. I think that Olympiacos will be able to steal one of these road games in Turkey and recover home court advantage. Do you expect Fenerbahce to be able to win 3 games in a row and close this series, Jörg?
I think it's possible that Olympiacos can steal one. I'm going to stick to my original pick of Fenerbahce in 4. I'm going to trust them to get both home games. And that's because of Hitudic, mostly. I think he did a great job adjusting. For game 1, he adjusted his starting lineup, going with Jekiri over Motley to match the size aspect that Fall brings to the game. So he went with Jekiri in the starting lineup on both games, and Motley coming off the bench and still having a great impact off the bench. But I think that was mostly to protect Motley from getting into foul trouble early, because that happens quite often. But without Wilbekin, they lacked scoring in the first game. And Nick Kalaric wasn't able to impact the game like he usually does. And for Olympiacos, having Cannon shooting like that, it was such an elite shooting performance for him. And then Sasha playing like the MVP, he was great again. So as a team, Olympiacos shot 16 from 29 from 3, and that's insane if you ask me. But then game 2, Ituris adjusted again. This time it wasn't in the starting lineup. But still without Wilbekin, they needed more scoring to be able to match up with Olympiacos and to steal this game on the road. And shout out to Carson Edwards for staying ready, even if, when he doesn't get the playing time. He stayed ready and he came in and he was huge for them. He scored 16 points and he provided instant offense for them that they were lacking a lot. And then he had Nigel Hayes-Davis having a pretty complete game to help him out. So they were able to steal this one, and this was a great performance by them. Even being down, they came back in a tough arena. Like, it's not easy to go to Greece and win a game, especially after being down like they were. So shout out to Fenerbahce, because this was a great win. And I think they have a legit chance to close the series at home.
I just see Olympiacos being better. I don't think that we will have Fenerbahce having 3 times more offensive rebounds or half of the turnovers of Olympiacos. I simply expect Olympiacos to be able to be better, to be more consistent on these next 2 games, and to be able to make some adjustments that will allow them to be competitive on both games. And I think that both teams are good enough for they to split these 2 games. And I expect a game 5 in Greece in an extremely competitive series where both teams have legit title aspirations. We have spoken about this and we have pointed it out, and we saw it in this game. The lack of a closer for Olympiacos, I think it was the main reason for them to be playing three guards late in the game because of the offensive side of the floor where they lack of a go-to guy. Slokas did it at moments and he was quite successful at it. Shout out for him. He performed very well late in the game in crunch time. But they don't have a player that is their go-to guy that is consistent enough to do it. So they try to do it by committee. And it's not that easy to do it late in a basketball game. That's their problem. So they are more comfortable in situations where they are already dominating the game and they are able to look for Sasha, and Sasha is able to get them easy baskets in these situations. But let's see what happens. I expect Olympiacos to do better, to perform better, to play at a higher level, to be more consistent, mostly, across the game. And with that, be able to make this a five-game series. But Fenerbahce, with a huge win on game three, and they are in a great situations and great coaching job by Tudis as always. He's one of the best in the business, and he showed why on this this game two between Olympiacos and Fenerbahce. Well, let's wrap up this exciting episode. Make sure you guys tune in next Monday when we will be recapping what happened on games 3 and 4 of the series, of the series that had game 4, and what to expect the rest of the way with the teams that qualified for the Final Four eventually, with the game 5s that we might have ahead. Subscribe to the podcast and follow us on Twitter at Ethos Euroleague, where we bring you any news that break about the competition, must-watch games, injury reports, and our daily trades in the end of each day of the competition, bringing you all the highlights of the action. My name is Andre, and I'll be seeing you guys soon.
Bye guys, see you on next episode.